So, Bob, you're a high-time charter pilot. You're used to bringing people to a specific destination. That's where they expected to go. Occasionally, I'm sure you've had to disappoint a group of passengers by saying, hey, we got to go somewhere else. But that's a mission mindset. This pilot, it's a personal flight, and he was kind of spring-loaded, it looks like, to bail and go to his alternate anyway. He reserved a rental car there. What, for you, would have to have been different in this situation to tip the balance and give a try for Hooks? You know, well, you talked about your personal minimum got too close. Well, what is too close?
Too close is when the possibility exists, as I see it in flight, that the storms could reach my destination before I get there. And that's going to mean tangling with thunderstorms potentially. And that's not for me, based on the potential negative outcomes of that. Not to mention a rough ride could be damage to the airplane. And worse yet, there's been many crashes due to airplanes becoming essentially disassembled within a storm.
But we're in visual conditions right now. So you think you're pretty sure you can see the storm. Great, it's not great visual conditions. So is it 20 miles for you? Is it 30 miles? Is it a gut feeling? How do you
Well, I think it's 20 miles because you have the potential of hail. Hail can range out from a storm quite a ways. So I would be concerned about that getting too close to a storm. And that can have devastating effects on your airplane. You know, these airplanes aren't designed to withstand hail. And I'm talking about the windshields, let alone damage to the wings.
If we're on the downwind side of it, then my distances are going to be much greater. But if I'm coming in perhaps behind a thunderstorm, I'm going to reduce those clearances. Particularly, you know, I'm not going to be under the anvil. I'm not going to run those risks of the hail, whatnot. The gust front is on the other side of the cell storm. So it depends on what side of the storm I'm in. And so my distances really depend upon my relationship to that storm, that cell, and the direction that it's moving.
And I'll add one thing here. The small radar antennas that are available in the airborne radar for these types of airplanes are very limited on what they can see. And with numerous storms around, it's possible that you're really not seeing the full picture with smaller radar antennas. They can be attenuated.
I think you pose a good question, Jeff, just how far is enough. And Doug made a point about upwind, downwind. There's also different kinds of thunderstorms. These are air mass thunderstorms. These are generated by the heat of Houston. They're not accompanied with a cold front out in Oklahoma that's moving at 35 or 40 miles an hour. And frankly, I don't have a number. I mean, Bob talked about 20 miles. Sure, that's kind of what we talk about in cruise at altitude. But I think, you know, it's experience and the type of thunderstorm you're dealing with.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, air mass thunderstorms I tend to feel a little more comfortable with coming closer to than, you know, a frontal line that you're going to avoid like the plague. And there's definitely something about the evolving situation. But when we are visual right here. So the majority of the table, when we went around and asked who would most people would bail and go to Hooks, let's look at one of the two of us who decided, no, I'm going to keep going. I want to toss it over to you, Dave. You said you would actually keep going for 1-7.
I would. It's like we've got a cell that's 20 miles northwest. It's moving east. Is it even going to be a factor for this airport? We've got a similar size, similar speed airplane ahead. That pilot can provide useful information. You know, I would be certainly cognizant of the alternate and making all, you know, going to the plan B, but I wouldn't do it yet. I think I would press on.
In many ways, I would agree with you, Dave, but in this particular situation, my concern would be with the airspace. And if I have to bail out, would I be able to bail out? Would ATC allow me to bail out without having to declare the E word?
And do I care? I mean, let's suppose I have to bail out. There's the busy airspace over there. That busy airspace, it's not my problem. I mean, it might limit some of the options I have without using the E word. But is it important for me to factor into my decision-making process how difficult a day I'm going to make it for a harried controller.
You know, that's, you know, as Dave said when we were talking before, happy controller is not his problem. It's you know, it's safety of your flight and doing what you got to do. But to back up just a little bit, the things that influenced my decision towards turning around and going back to Lone Star was there was no real downside to that, and there was no real upside to pressing on. You're getting closer to the weather. Yeah, you probably more than likely would be able to sneak it in, but you know, you're also looking at a 17 knot gusting crosswind already with the cell 20 miles away. What's it going to be when you get closer? As opposed to going back to Lone Star, which is VFR and it's got a runway pointed into the wind, and you've got a car there, and you're 20 miles away from your destination anyhow. There's no real downside to going back.
Why push it?
Yeah, exactly.
The other thing is, forget the car. Go there, sit, and wait. Yeah. You know, I don't know how many times I've tried to get back home, and there's a cell sitting there or a cell heading there. And so I go to an airport that's, you know, 20 miles away, sit and wait, have a coffee, drain my sumps. Half an hour later, go home.
It's not like it's the only airport around. But, you know, I think it's reasonable to press on a bit. I guess the issue then becomes, you know, when do you throw in the towel? How close are you going to get, and how bad are the conditions going to have to be before you throw in the towel on this?
Yeah, it's like the crosswind consideration is a good point. You know, I think that's a really good factor to consider. But it's like you already know about the crosswind as you're approaching, and it's like if that's not the deciding issue, you know, you've already decided that that's within your limits. I just don't see the advantage in changing. You know,
what would get you to change?
You know, it's like the considerations that occur to me are things like after landing, because where are these storms going to be when your airplane is on the ramp? When I'm in the air, I feel like I've got really great ability to avoid thunderstorms, but it's like if there's a thunderstorm heading for an airport that may be clear, it's like it may be clear to land, but your responsibility for your aircraft doesn't end once you shut it down. So it's like that's what I'm thinking about in this scenario is more of the post-flight considerations. I'm curious about that, because looking at this set of circumstances, I feel pretty confident that, you know, I'm going to get to my destination and make the approach just fine without any complications.
Maybe we should add to the list of things that we investigate when investigating an alternate whether there's hangaring available at your alternate.
You know, we're chuckling, but it's like that is a primary consideration, really.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense.
You have to be careful also. Relying on the guy ahead of you, this caravan pilot that's out there. Things are going to be different when you get to that same spot, and his or her comfort level may be a lot different than your comfort level. Or
he's a FedEx pilot trying to just get in.
Yeah, exactly. And or they may have different equipment than you have, which gives them more information than you have. So well, it's good to talk to those guys ahead of you and find out what's going on, get that pilot report. You have to kind of take it with a grain of salt.
That's just one piece of information.
Right. Now, I was the lone person who was interested in actually asking for the opposite approach, the 3-5 approach. My thinking being, I can take an approach further away from the storm if I can get that approach. And if it's coming in from that direction, we talked about wind shear. Maybe it's because I learned to fly in Colorado, but I'm always watching a storm coming towards the airport and what the current winds are on the surface, expecting them to suddenly reverse on me at the end of the approach. And I love the idea of being able to come in with the storm out ahead of me, in front of me, planning to circle because the winds are still heading towards that storm, and knowing that if there's a sudden wind shift while I'm on approach, I now am set up to land straight in from a gust front coming out of the storm if it's on the opposite side of the runway.
Well, you may be faced, though, with a situation where you can't do that circle to land if the storm approaches close enough.
Granted, if it's too close,
yes.
Right? But to ask for an approach in the opposite direction, planning to circle because it's still VFR at that airport, at least marginal, but have the possibility of the straight in. I'm curious why nobody else was interested in that situation. What ruled out the 3-5 approach for everyone else?
To me, it was the uncertainty of how long it would take to get it.
So you wouldn't even ask?
You could ask, but that would be probably like fourth or fifth down on the list of stuff that I would do. I mean, the other thing that did kind of pop up would be, at least in my mind, would be another kind of approach, either a visual or a contact. May actually be an alternative there too, which would allow you to navigate directly to the airport.
Wasn't an alternative here. We didn't have
choice. But you know, this maybe that's a little more thinking out of the box in a situation like this.
But as far as asking the controller or querying the controller relative to the 3-5 approach from the south side, it seems to me that any time that I've asked for a deviation on the approach or another approach, it's very common for the controller, the first response from him to be stand by.
Yeah, because the controller has to coordinate with a lot of
There's
other people.
There's a lot of other things involved here. So inherent in that request is a delay. Yeah. So things are not going to get better while time rolls on.
Right, and time is of the essence here, as you point out. And I think the contact approach is a brilliant solution, you know, and I mean, at the very least, a vector to the final approach fix. You know, you don't want to have to fly the full approach, but it's like to the Jeff's point about why the 3-5 approach is undesirable. It's true that you could maybe see a gust front that's coming, but it's like who is going to land right beyond that? I mean, it's like those are powerful shifting winds. I don't want any part of that. It's like if I see a gust front coming across the airport, it's like I am gonna abort the approach and divert somewhere else. It's like that's not anything that I want to tangle with.
It's very late at that point to do that, and to land with a tailwind, your landing distances just go up tremendously. If the winds turn around and you've got a 20 or 25 knot tailwind, that's an enormous increase in landing distance.
Right. And all these things, to me, make the 3-5 approach totally unattractive.
I'd like to go back to the contact approach or the visual approach, and I would prefer the contact because the contact now still gives me that escape option and still having the protection of separation from ATC. Right. And I've used this to get into airports where there were thunderstorms around, and the contact was the best way of doing it.
I have too, and it works. You know, you only need a mile in clear clouds, but just because you only need it doesn't mean that you can't do it if the visibility is 5 miles in a 2,000-foot ceiling. It gives you the freedom to maneuver and to maneuver as close to a cloud as you need to get to the airport and pick your way to it.
And still be provided separation by ATC.
But
within the escape options.
Within the context of the alternatives we have here, the options we have here, that's not one of them.
Well, but when I'm flying, I'm not limited by someone's document.
Well, let me put it out there then.
I'm gonna wave my magic wand here, and I'm gonna add request a contact approach to the list of options. How many people at the table would say, yeah, that's what I want is the contact approach?
Even though I brought it up, I think I would still chicken out and go back to the safe alternate. And as I said earlier, there's really no downside to it, and there's plenty of upside. All the stuff we're talking about here is more like strategic butt-saving options, if you will. But you know, it's an option, but why do you have to go through that if you've got something safe?
Yeah. This could lead to a discussion, though, of alternates and how we pick alternates and our requirements for the alternates. And when we really get down to the nitty-gritty of alternates, what's the purpose of the alternate? It's if you go Nordo, ATC, does ATC know where your alternate is? No, they don't. They have to go to flight service. This is for search and rescue purposes. And I don't know how many flights when I've actually had to go to an alternate, it was not the alternate that I had planned or filed at all. Now, I am incredibly impressed by this pilot's OCD in choosing Lone Star as his alternate. Things I would never, ever think of. Okay. For me, an alternate is an ongoing dynamic choice throughout an entire flight. And that's why I would really, with the option of the contact, I'd be following Dave in.
I'd be right behind you. Like, I like that one best of all.
It's like, if this alternate is so great, why is it our alternate? Why isn't it our primary airport? I mean, it's like, come on. We're going to have some reason that we want to get to our primary airport of choice. It's like it was we wanted to go there for some reason.
Well, it sounds like the consensus at the table really boils down around maintaining options open and that risk-benefit balance, right? Because the side of the table that's going towards landing at Lone Star right now is saying, look, it's just the gain of continuing the last bit is just not that much better than bailing and going with this option B, whether it's what we planned in advance or it's something we picked on the fly, like, hey, that's just a good out, let's take it now. Whereas the other side of the table over here is like, give me the approach that gives me the most options to try and get to my destination and can evolve on the fly in a changing situation. And maybe that's really the takeaway from this whole thing.
Risk benefit
and keeping options open is really sort of the takeaway from this whole scenario.
I'm just reminded of this is like my wife and I trying to pick a parking place because I want to go to the she wants to get the closest possible parking space and I want to get the first acceptable parking place, and it's like, which are we going to do?